Welcome, everybody, to episode number 42 of the KMP Show. I'm your host, Jonathan Playtech, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Mr. Rich Kreich. Hello, sir.
Hello. Yes, number 42, which we knew, definitely.
We definitely knew off the top at the beginning of this. That was the first thing we wrote down.
Episode 42, you ready to do this? And I'm like, episode 42, cannot wait.
Mm-hmm. It's like Roll Tide. That's how we just tell each other what the episode number is, just so that we can not sound like idiots. Because I've done that a few times, right? Just say the wrong episode number, and I don't really care about it.
Or we do like this, KMP episode number, feverishly looking, feverishly Googling, 38, yay!
Do you do what I do? Do you do that to where you have like a maze of files that you think is being like so super organized, but it's really not? Because
it's like organized at the top level.
Yeah.
Like, I have one that's, like, organized, because I have all my show. I have, like, podcasts, and I have a folder that has all the shows, so it's got, like, Over and Back, it's got KMP or whatever, but then inside of that folder is just a fucking maze of madness. It's just, like, images I've saved,
right.
Word docs, like, it's just a mess. It's an absolute total mess. But, like, at the top level, when you look at it from the outside, it's like, oh, wow, this is pretty organized, and it's like, no, it's like, when you click that actual folder, it's a total...
Yeah, because I've got, you know, on one of my hard drives, I've got, you know, it's I'm like, all right, KMP is front and center. It's not going to be hidden under a subfolder. It is the KMP show. And then it's blah, 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 blah. Episodes is one of the subfolders. And then you got to click on that. And then it's WAV and MP3. And I just get lost. I get lost in my own maze of craziness. When I created it, I thought, oh, you know what? This is going to be super organized. It's not going to be a mess of files. It's not going to be a mess of episode files and then the Adobe Audition sessions that go with them that get created when you render them. It's not going to be that. It's going to be clean, neat, and digitally organized. And now I just get lost.
It's almost too organized in some senses. So yeah, that happens to me at work a lot. And then like the pain in the ass is, you know, getting through all those folders to get what you need to. Like, you could set up a favorite, but for whatever reason, every day I just go through the process of like clicking through 8 folders.
Yep.
And I'm like, why did I do this? Why did I just put it? Like, all I need is this one. Like, I know I need this. Like, I should just put it at the front. Like, I should just do something. But yeah, you know, it's always always interesting there. But yeah, and you always, it's always with good intentions. Like, you're always getting like the first. I always get this like the first, like when I get a new computer or whatever. I'm like, all right, this one is gonna be good. Like, everything's ready. Everything's in folders. And for the
no
most part,
desktop
I stay there
clutter,
for like a year.
Nothing on the desktop.
Yeah, no.
It's gonna be minimalist.
Yeah, I stay pretty good on the desktop. I just hide my icons. Like, I'm sure if you actually open my icons, every single one's on there. But I just do the hide just so they don't even fathom that they even get on there. But yeah, like I'm always like, all right, this is gonna be good. I do it for maybe 3 months, it's solid, maybe a year tops, and then after that it's just a total train.
And then it's open, then it's wide open. Yeah. You're just like, screw it.
I just use the downloads folder. Like, the only folder I use is downloads, and like everything's just in there, and it's just a total disaster.
Yeah, like, oh man, I gotta go through this. And then, you know, when you download like documents and stuff, and they've got like, you know, standard names, you've got like 4 different versions of the same document, and you gotta remember like which one is which. Like, which one is this? No, it's not that one. All right, what about this one over here? Yeah, I'm the same exact way. We got a lot to get to today. It's been a while since we last did a show, but we're going to talk about a little bit of breaking news regarding the NFL and Ezekiel Elliott. We're going to talk about that coming up in the show. We're also going to preview the NFL as best as 2 people who aren't super diehard NFL fans can be. I mean,
I'm big on the gambling scene, of course. You and I. So yeah, don't worry.
Yes. I was looking at it, I thought, you know what? $100.
There's
here,
a few bets that even though I don't know a lot, I'm like, hey, you know.
I know, right?
Let's, after the show, you and I should pull our money. There's a few there that I'm like, I don't know.
You're thinking about the Bears and the NFC North, aren't you? You're thinking about the Bears and the NFC North.
You know, the return on investment of that is incredible. So,
Can't not, like, put $100
on
it.
You can't not put $100,000 on the Bears.
It's just $100. $100 is all you need to make a bunch of money. That's it. I'm not greedy. Yeah, that's all right. And $100 is not that big an outlay. You know, it's just and it keeps you kind of engaged. And, you know, that's probably why a bunch of people.
Do you want to be engaged on Bears football this year? I feel like I don't want to do that. I'd rather not.
Mike Glennon led Bears football? No.
Oh, you're right.
Because as long as that guy, like, that guy's like an older Brock Osweiler. Like, hey, big, tall dude. Hell yeah. Quarterback. NFL. Oh, my God. He can't throw the ball hard.
It's like, nah, I'm terrible. I'm really bad.
I really can't throw the ball hard at all. Like, why can't you throw the ball hard? I don't know, bro. Can't do
it. He's one of those other ones that I wonder. He's a very good example, Brock Osweiler. Not Mike Glenn. Mike Glenn's garbage, too. But he might be one, too. But Brock Osweiler is one that I remember. It's like, we talk about it all the time. And on the show, we've talked about it, is like NFL scouting and how teams just, for whatever reason, seem to, I don't know if they just don't do their due diligence, they get tricked, they get fooled into something. Like, Matt Flynn is one of my all-time guys. Like, that guy has, like, three good games, and the Seahawks are like, well, we're convinced, like, give this guy everything that we could possibly give him, he's ready to go, he's all set, and it's like, he's terrible, and everyone's like, well, yeah, you knew he was terrible, right? He just had, like, three good games, like, out of nowhere. Like, that's not worth paying for. But, like, Brock Osweiler was the same way. Like, the Broncos were a great team. Peyton Manning goes down. Brock Osweiler fits in, like, admirably to a team that really could have operated without a quarterback. They essentially did. Because remember when Peyton Manning, like those last years of Peyton Manning, were like, he hiked it and like couldn't throw more than 2 feet. And like, they still made it to the Super Bowl. Like, they were still really good. And like, they still won a damn Super Bowl. But like, you knew that Brock Osweiler wasn't good. Like, you were watching him play and you knew that he wasn't good. And the Texans are like, no, let's give him everything we have. And then within like a game, they're like, oh, he sucks, he's terrible. And it's like, well, you, how did you not know that? Like, do they not do their due diligence? Do they get fooled? I just know. I never understand that. The NFL seems to be the biggest league for just like the free agent signings. Like, this guy's terrible. What the hell are we doing? This is awful. Sorry. And just immediately cutting bait, like, real quick. Because
well, you know what?
As we'll talk about, their union is horrible. Yes. And doesn't really protect them. Yes,
that circles back to the union and Ezekiel Elliott. So, but we'll also talk a little bit about the NFL season coming up. We are on the precipice. It might even happen a little bit earlier. There's a little, also some news about, you know what? As Hurricane, is it Irma that's approaching southern Florida?
Irma, yes, yes.
And then there's another one already behind it. There's
another tropical. Really?
Yeah, there's a tropical storm formed behind Irma. Tropical storm already formed behind Irma could become another hurricane within 36 hours. So says some report I read. Is anybody really questioning climate change anymore? Isn't this one of the things that was predicted, was milder winters and then like super hardcore storm seasons like hurricane season? Like right now, where Harvey just decimated Houston and Irma is about to decimate, I don't know, I'm guessing all of Florida, looking at the modeling that I've seen. And now already there is, I believe the name is H-I-J, yeah, I think it's Jose, that's forming already behind Irma. So
I can't wait for the think pieces about how they shouldn't have named it Jose, but that'll be fun.
There was already a Facebook joke that Katie read out to me that was pretty good.
Okay, all right, there we go. Yeah, that wouldn't have taken long.
You can guess. This show isn't going to get overtly political, but you can guess what the joke was, given the name of the tropical storm,
right?
And the current president of the United the current president of the United States.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because you know, I'm not even going to make the joke because it's just. But there's a bunch of going on. We're also going to talk about what in the hell the Mets are doing. Are they not
dumbest team?
The dumbest team. The stupidest team in baseball. Gotta be.
Which you would think at this point, like, because 2017 baseball is kind of, it's become a certain point where like every team is ran by like, you know, these Harvard MBA dudes or whatever, or these Stanford MBA guys. And there's like very little personality in these, and they do everything like pretty much by the book. Like, there's no like ridiculous signings anymore. Everybody kind of stays within a certain level. And then there's the fucking Mets who are just like, boom, boom, boom. Like, fuck you, whatever. Like, here we go. Let's do this. And this is the one that I've seen the most people be like, all right, what are you guys doing? Like, what are you trying to suck? Like, are you really, like,
are you really trying to, or, you know what? They got to be pissed at him. We'll get into it, but I'm thinking they're probably pissed at him. And we're also going to do a little bit of AL MVP talk. It's really interesting. And I think I know who Rich wants to be MVP. I know who you want to be AL MVP really, 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 really badly. And it's not Aaron Judge.
Ooh, I wonder.
It's not Aaron Judge. I know who you want to be AL MVP just to prove a goddamn point. And I'm the exact same way. I'm letting you know right now. I'm the exact same way. But first off, a little bit of breaking news here. Ezekiel Elliott, a decision has come down from arbitrator Harold Henderson, or NFL appeals officer, I guess you want to. Some people call him an arbitrator. He has decided to uphold Ezekiel Elliott's 6-game suspension for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy, according to multiple reports. This is from Emma Baccalieri at Deadspin.com. Her father, Bobby, was famous on The Sopranos. I'm just kidding. No relation, because Bobby Baccalieri is a fictional character. But Ezekiel Elliott's suspension is upheld by the NFL appeals officer, but Elliott will play Sunday because the NFL in court today, in federal court in Texas, said that while they are upholding the Ezekiel Elliott suspension, they will allow him to play on Sunday. And a federal district court or a U.S. district court judge in Texas is expected to rule by 5 p.m. Friday on a temporary restraining order lobbied for by the NFL Players Association, which would enjoin the NFL, stay with me, which would enjoin the NFL from suspending Ezekiel Elliott under its personal conduct policy because the NFLPA says it is arbitrary and capricious and they didn't stick to their own standards, whatever they are arguing. So a final decision, because we're going to do this all over again next week, a final decision by a U.S. District Court judge on a temporary restraining order enjoining Roger Goodell and the NFL from further suspending Ezekiel Elliott is due in by Friday by 5 p.m. Obviously, we won't have it by the time this podcast goes up. But Ezekiel Elliott will be taking the field for the Cowboys on Sunday for the season opener. So, Rich, does that change your betting at all? Cowboys money man.
Jeez, I don't know now anymore, especially with, but I mean, this is a super interesting thing, and it is kind of funny the timing of all this, because I think everybody involved realizes how important it is to know one way or another Ezekiel Elliott. Not for the victim, not for any of these issues, but like literally just so that betting lines and like fantasy football isn't totally affected, because we know that that's at the end of the day, like why there's such this weird thing around like the timing of it and it being on Friday, and yes, you can play this week, but then we're not sure about the next weeks or whatever. Like the ambiguity of this particular week is interesting and how they're trying to sort of solve that. But a lot of this stuff, you know, aside that sort of stuff, as far as the NFL and the problem that we keep having is every single year in the NFL, it's dominated by these types of conversations, like the Deflategate and this Ezekiel Elliott thing and the Ray Rice thing and this sort of stuff. And one of the big issues that it really comes down to, and I think this is yet another example of one of the big issues with the NFL and the current CBA, is that the NFL Players Association, after the last CBA, I forgot when was that last little holdout, lockout thing they did?
Was it 2012?
Yeah, I feel like it was 3 or 4 years ago. I'm blanking on exactly when it was. Well, regardless of whenever it was, the Players Association essentially gave Roger Goodell the opportunity to just kind of decide whatever the fuck he wanted for suspensions.
Mm-hmm.
And the downside of that is Roger Goodell's a moron, and since then has just decided whatever the fuck he wants for suspensions. But every single time he doles out these suspensions, which make no sense and don't follow any standards and don't follow anything, you get the NFLPA who go, oh, but that's not following any standards. Why are you doing? Oh, we can't predict. Or, oh, this isn't following anything. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, you gave me this right. Like, yes, I'm an idiot. Do not give this idiot the right to just kind of say, ah, 8 games, ah, 6 games, ah, 12 games, whatever, I don't know. Games for you, games here. There are no rules.
You get a game.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, this is one of those rare situations where, like, everybody is sort of in the wrong, in the sense that the NFL might be in the wrong for just kind of deciding that this is the amount of games he could, like, get, despite the fact that, obviously, he didn't get, you know, because he never got technically charged by any police department.
Never got technically charged, and the NFL's own investigators doubted the veracity of the claims of the accuser because, as the NFL's investigators said in documents that were released or obtained, they said that she attempted to mislead the investigators multiple times and was directly... there were contrary statements from witnesses given to police, but the NFL investigators said, well, those witnesses wouldn't cooperate with our investigation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There were photos of bruises, but who's to say? You know, she said that he hit her and caused the bruises, which is a very serious claim. Not saying you know, if somebody says, hey, he hit me and here's photo evidence, you should go, well, did you really fall in the shower or what? Like, what's going on here? No, that's evidence enough. But there were other people who told investigators and who told police that she gets in fights at bars. She falls down all the time when she gets so fall down drunk, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as it comes down to it, it looks more and more like the NFL suspended Ezekiel Elliott for not cooperating fully with the investigation, because he also had something go. He had the Tom Brady thing where it's like, oh, I got a new phone and I deleted and smashed and burned the other phone I got. Right, so, yes. I can't.
In the ocean. It fell in the ocean.
Yeah. Whoops. Like, yeah. I was on a banana boat. It's me and LeBron. And whoops, fell out of my board shorts. Don't know what happened there. So the nitty gritty of the investigation is, you know, I don't know. I can't say with any definitive you know, certainty that Ezekiel Elliott did not hit his then girlfriend. But I can tell you with absolute certainty that the NFL didn't find a smoking gun or anything close to it.
Right. So you got that. So there's not really any of that background. The NFL just decides, hey, let's dole out this random suspension here. The NFLPA then says, well, you can't do that. Why can you do that? You can't do that. And it's like, yes, you can, because you idiots allowed him in your CBA to do that. Like, you also allowed, like, the NFL to take back, like, what, 4% of their profits for no fucking, like, you're the ones holding out. And then you ended up giving them more money in the end and giving their commissioner, like, unilateral ability to just dole out suspensions as he pleases.
Yep.
Maybe you want to look over that CBA before you do it. So, and the problem is that this now permeates every single offseason. Every single thing is like, oh, this guy does this. Roger Goodell doles out some suspension. Everybody goes, well, that seems kind of weird. That's kind of an odd suspension. That time doesn't really make sense. The NFLPA goes, well, that doesn't make sense. What are you doing? And then they just jawjack for months on end. And it's like, it's so annoying, but it's not gonna go away until that next CBA is out, because this is just the kind of the new NFL that we live in. And this is kind of what that CBA has sort of led to, is stuff like this, where, you know, again, it's, you know, obviously this is a little bit more serious than the Deflategate, but the Deflategate was one that was just like so dumb. It's like, what are we doing? We're arguing for years about, like,
yep,
this, you know, odd, like, weird, oh my God, it's 0.2% lower than it's supposed to. Like, what are we doing? Why is this happening? Why is every single talk about the NFL of this weird, like, lawyer, and like you said, at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of lawyers getting paid to laugh at all these people fighting. They're like, yeah, all right, whatever.
There's a lot of people that are repaying. There's going to be a lot of, like, paralegals that are going on vacations because of this, and there's going to be a lot of juniors at law firms in and around wherever this case happens that are going to make partner because of this. I mean, it's going to be a lot of people are going to make a lot of money, and very few of them are going to be NFL players or NFL executives.
And a lot of trees are going to die with how much.
Oh my God! Is gonna be like, oh Jesus!
Needlessly strewn about. Like, okay, well, let's look at page 190 of the CBA. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, Goodell's a moron, and I think he's an idiot. But at the end of the day, the NFL Players Association gave him the power to do this.
Right.
It's like, yeah, I know it's probably shitty, but you told him you could do that. You collectively bargained for him to be able to just say, yeah, fuck it, 8 games, whatever. Who cares? Whatever. Who knows? And he's going to do that because he's a moron. It's so bizarre. And the NFLPA is just the weakest fucking union in the entire sports world. Just completely
yeah, and weakest. that lockout we were thinking of was 2011, and they had to cancel the Hall of Fame game. Oh no! And they basically lost the entire preseason, but were able to preserve the entire regular season. And that was when the rookie wage scale was introduced, the medical insurance and medical plans for NFL pensions and whatnot were extended to veteran players, and you're on the pension, you're on the insurance for life, essentially. So that was, I think that kind of had to do with the concussion settlement too, and the brain injury thing. This was kind of also a make good on that. But, you know, my thing is this, is that the NFL, this is what, apparently, the NFL and the NFL Players Association wants is to be, like you said, embattled in court every single year over the latest suspension that either side doesn't like. Whatever it is, whether it's Tom Brady's balls or Ezekiel Elliott maybe not punching somebody, this is going to keep happening, and ostensibly the two sides want it to keep happening. They want to keep battling each other in court. And until there's, you know what? Until there's actually, there needs to be a labor stoppage. There's got to be labor stoppage. There's going to need to be a strike by NFL players to get rid of all this crap. If you don't like it, and the fans don't like it, the players don't like it. I don't think the players like being at the whim of Roger Goodell, even though they collectively bargained for it. And the players don't like it, and you're going to have to get rid of it. And to do that, you're going to have to go on strike. And there's no other way around it. It's not going to be, you're not going to collectively bargain out Roger Goodell's power to decide to do whatever he wants to do. You're not going to, there's no way to collectively bargain that out. They have the high ground and they're not giving it up. The only way to take it away from them is hitting them in the wallets by saying, we're not playing, good luck playing with scab players. And I wasn't an NFL fan at the time. Was I even alive? What was that? That was the 87 strike when they tried playing scab players?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. That was, yeah, was that 87? I think you're right. I think it was right around there. So I think, yeah, neither of us were alive, or if we were, it's
right.
We were watching very much as, like, yeah, it was 1987 season. So, yeah, believe it or not, at I was what 6 or 7 months. Yeah, I wasn't watching much football at that point.
Yeah, I was born during training camp, so I was. But and here's the one thing about Ezekiel Elliott though, and this kind of dovetails, and I don't want to venture too far into it because I can venture way too far into it. But this kind of dovetails with the Title IX kangaroo courts of colleges and universities adjudicating claims of sexual assault and kicking out students that they believe, by some standard, committed some kind of heinous sex act or whatever. And the problem is that private universities think that in the case of these kangaroo courts, as they so often turn out to be, private universities thought for the longest time, well, hey, we can do whatever we want because the Constitution and due process doesn't apply to us because we're private, and they are largely correct. But when they sign a contract with a student and say, this is your governing policy, this is your little handbook, and here are the rules, and da-da-da-da-da, a lot of the private universities included in those handbooks, here is the process for adjudicating these kinds of claims under Title IX. And in them, they said this will be governed by this standard, or they alluded to some standard and made it known that there would be some kind of evidentiary standard by which this, quote, trial would take place. Then, with the Dear Colleague letter from Title IX that went to all schools, the private universities thought, well, you know what, to hell with this. We're just going to do whatever we want just so that we don't get sued by a victim and have to pay out the nose. Well, what they're doing now is they're losing in court to students that they've kicked out saying, hey, you did this. And the students say, well, you didn't even abide by your own standards, which we agreed to when I signed this contract. So applying that to the NFL, the NFL makes reference to some reasonable, I want to say it's a reasonable or credible standard when they talk about evidence for suspending or disciplining a player under the personal conduct policy. They make reference to some standard. So although Roger Goodell has the power to hear all evidence and make the decision at his own whim, he might be still kind of governed by that standard that the NFL itself says in the CBA, this is what, or in their personal conduct policy, this is what we're going to do. And that's what the Ezekiel Elliott thing is all about, which I find personally very interesting. From just a weird nerd standpoint, I find it very interesting to know whether the NFLPA has a legitimate point in saying, well, yeah, Roger, you can do whatever you want, but even your own contract with us says that these are going to be the limits. And I think there may be limits there for Roger
Goodell.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it's been updated ever since, but the NFL has an antitrust agreement, right? After the AFL-NFL merger?
They have a...
I don't know if that changed, because I know there was that weird, that American Needle NFL thing a few years ago. So I don't know if that changed, but again, that's another thing where unfortunately, and baseball is, you know, obviously has their antitrust agreement where essentially the government says, hey, don't fuck with college or high school football, and then do whatever the hell you want. Like, for the most, MLB has really been able to do whatever the fuck they want without the government ever telling them anything. So this is another weird example where maybe antitrust, not necessarily the greatest idea in the sense that you essentially let the owners or the NFL itself run its own weird, I don't know if you call it its own government, but its own like weird bubble where it can kind of exist on its own, as long as it doesn't go and try to fight anybody else. As long as it just lives in its own world.
Right, and unfair labor practices, essentially, they can collude against Colin Kaepernick.
Right, and sign Joe Webb, who hasn't taken an NFL snap since 2011, when the last lockout happened. So.
Yeah, but he's familiar with the offense.
He's got good pocket presence.
Yep.
He's like, no, I really don't. Don't sign me. Why are you guys?
I haven't been
me?
Present like, in a pocket in 6 years.
Right. I don't. I haven't been playing anything. I'm just sitting at home. I'm really out of shape.
Unless you count Madden. Please. Unless you count Madden, then I got great.
Right, I'm really
presence.
Good at Madden. I've been killing long shots. So maybe they looked at the leaderboards and like, ooh, who is this guy? And it's like, is that former NFL quarterback Joe Webb? And
he's
like,
maybe it is.
Yeah. He's like, it is. It's like Joe Webb number one is his account name, and they're like, hey, are you ex-NFL quarterback Joe Webb? He's like, yeah.
Like, are you
for
really?
The Bills? No, not really.
Well, it's either you or Colin Kaepernick, so yeah. What are your thoughts on police? Let's get that side of the way first. They've got to be asking guys like that. But yeah, you're right. They can do a whole lot of bad stuff that other corporations in the business and in marketplaces can't do. and they can negotiate their TV rights and lock people out, and they can keep prices high for their own merchandise, and they can disallow other competitors, or they can keep them out of the market or keep them from competing with them, and the NFL isn't going to say boo to them. But if the NFL just starts going around and doing all this stuff and making itself look bad, and vicariously the government that lets them operate pretty much without limit, then yeah, the government might have something to say about that.
So I'm actually looking this up. It's actually 2014. So this is in the midst of the Ray Rice thing, is that Congress is actually, there was a few congressmen who stood up and said that there was one who was a Democrat from Connecticut, and there's another one here, I think is a Republican from New Hampshire.
Ooh, bipartisan support.
Yep, and like they were saying, well, it was after the Ray Rice thing, and obviously the NFL didn't do a whole lot with the Ray Rice thing. It was just kind of like, whatever. They, at that point, were saying, I wonder if we shouldn't allow the NFL to have antitrust because they can't be trusted to handle domestic abuse stuff. So I'm guessing that what we've seen recently is Roger Goodell being like, no, we're good, please don't take antitrust. No, we got it, we're good, we're good. So, and that's been, a lot of people have said that as well, and the NFLPA has said, now you're turning it around, and a lot of people think that, you know, guys like Ezekiel Elliott and guys in the future are going to be paying for the sins of years and years and years of, you know, head in the sand regarded, you know, domestic abuse and CTE and all this other stuff, and now they're going to, you know, the Goodell and the NFL are going to be over the top in terms of suspensions to really put it in, oh, look, we care. We care so much, and this might be another reason why. It's because the Congress, after the Ray Rice thing, is saying, I don't know if you guys deserve antitrust anymore. You clearly haven't been responsible. So, yeah, it's kind of between a rock and a hard place there a little bit, where it's like,
yep.
You know, Goodell knows that that's the, you know, if, God forbid, if they lose their antitrust, that would be, yeah.
Might that finally end Roger Goodell? For the love of God, the
that
league
might
has had
NFL, to be honest.
But like, the league has had egg on its face for the last how many years?
Yeah, well,
every single year.
Well,
but
D-Ray
they keep
Smith
giving him raises and they keep extending
moves.
Him. They keep giving him
money.
Well,
cuz he's great for the owners. Yeah. The owners love him. Like he works for the owners, and that's the thing. Like the commissioner works for the owners. It was the Bud Selig thing. We all knew Bud Selig was a boob, but the owners were making a ton of money off of him. So
right.
They don't care.
But he was their boob, right? He may be
you're
a
right,
boob,
yeah, that's true.
But he's our boob. So, yeah, I get it. And you know what? NFL franchises are worth more than they ever have been, and revenue is way up, and maybe it's time for Goodell to get out before the TV rights thing just comes crashing down, and then the league has to completely reevaluate itself.
Both guys probably need to go. DeMarie Smith is a horrible union leader, and he needs – yeah, him and Goodell, they just need to not, because obviously it didn't work out in 2011. It was kind of a train wreck. Well, I guess the owners are enjoying the fruits of that lockout. But yes, yeah, so again, like that's what the interesting part is. Like Goodell's a boob and he's an idiot, but the owners got a sweet ass deal on the last labor agreement. So it's like, do we really want to? And they still have the NFLPA is still the weakest union in sports. We've talked about it a lot of times where a guy can just get cut. It's like, you suck, you're cut. Like, oh, okay. Like, do I get my contract? Like, now we'll give you like, and. How about an $80,000 injury settlement? There you go. Bye. Like, okay. Hey, like, why did I sign a contract? Like, what? Are contracts not things or what? Like, it's
they're
it's
more
really
like,
bizarre. Yeah,
yeah. They're called contracts, right? Exactly.
Right.
We call them contracts, but it's really only if we like you and decide to pay you. So.
Right. And actually, we're going to pay you a lot of money up front and then just do whatever we want with you after that. So.
Yep. So Ezekiel Elliott will be taking the field on Sunday. And right now, per Bovada, let me scroll down here. Excuse me. Right now, the boys are tied in terms of favorites to win the NFC East. They are tied at +190 with the New York Giants. Philadelphia is behind them at +250, and Washington is at +600. Meaning, if you bet $100 on the Cowboys to win the NFC East right now, and they do, then you get back $290. Meaning, you won $190 on your $100 bet. That's all the way the money line betting works. And so, get that locked that in now, because these lines were made with the idea being that Ezekiel Elliott wouldn't play the first six games of the Cowboys season. But right now, if he's playing Sunday, and then if the ruling on Friday comes down that, no, we're going to stay this suspension at least until we get this court proceeding done, which is going to take years. I mean, Tom Brady didn't have to serve his Deflategate suspension until 2 years after the fact, right? And then finally it was all done. They exhausted all the court proceedings, and then he finally had to do it. So it very well could be that you need to lock in these odds now. Now, speaking of the NFL, Rich, are you excited or no for the NFL season?
We'll see. I mean, it seems like a pretty interesting season. I mean, the one part that I'm not excited about and seeing these odds is maybe a little less excited. It's how favorited the Patriots are so far, because like they're way ahead of everybody, and they're like, it seems like, but it's the NFL, so anything.
And this
can
is
really
after
happen.
Losing Julian Edelman too. They've updated these lines,
right? Yeah, it's like, well, we lost their good receiver. It doesn't matter. We're still down.
Now we got that Kevin Hogan guy. We got that weird white guy that nobody ever heard of. But like,
yeah, exactly. That's the kind of the Patriots thing. It's like, hey, here's some like shitty white, you know, slot receiver. Here you go. He's great. Like, go away. Like, like, we just make these out of a factory. Like, we tried to figure that out the other day. I remember you and I. What was his name again? Now I remember. Was it Brandon Stokely? No, it wasn't Brandon Stokely. We tried to. No, don't. We're going to do this rabbit hole again. It took us like 45 minutes to figure out who this guy was. This is off air that you and I were talking about it. But anyway,
okay. All right.
Shitty slot wide receiver Patriots. There are many, so it is very hard to figure out.
Danny Amendola.
That was it. Yeah, that was exactly it. Yeah. Okay. He's like 5'4". It's like, no, you're not good. Like, how are you good? Stop being good. That's impossible, but that's kind of the Patriots. But yeah, so that's a little bit of a downer, is that the Patriots seem so dominant. But it is the NFL, and it's like anything can happen. But when you look at some of the other teams, you know, aside from the Patriots, ones that seem like favorites, there's a lot of interesting teams in there. You know, obviously you have the Packers. The Raiders are an interesting one to look at again this year. I really find that'd be pretty cool if the Raiders kind of went on a decent run. The Cowboys, as you mentioned, are in the mix there for, you know, first time in a little bit of a little while. The Falcons, the redemption of the Falcons. Can they, you know, get back to the Super Bowl and maybe not blow a gigantic lead?
Yeah, but they lost
lead.
Their offensive coordinator, though. He's now calling plays in San Francisco, and you've got Steve Sarkisian, and you got to make sure he's not climbed inside of a Jack Daniels bottle.
Remember when we talked about how the when you're in the coaches fraternity,
oh my God,
you can never,
yes,
ever,
right.
ever leave
you're
the coaches fraternity?
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely goddamn right.
Like, yep. That guy probably, like, why is he your first pick?
Colin Kaepernick doesn't want people killed for just saying, looking at police officers, and he can't find a job. He started a Super Bowl. And Steve Sarkisian has been a fall-down drunk for going on a decade now. And he
let's give him the reins. Well, I'll give him the offense to
he
a Super Bowl.
Upward into a job in the NFL. Upward.
Right. Got an upgrade.
Gets fired from USC. Lands in Alabama all of a sudden. Whoa, where am I? Like a drunk being thrown from the car wreckage. How did I end up here? And then even Nick Saban was like, good. All right, get the hell out of here. And now he's the offensive coordinator in Atlanta for a Super Bowl damn contending team. God.
All right, that's. Incredible. That's...
Take away their antitrust exemption. That's
it's official. They're
yes.
done. They can't
no, they can't. It's unacceptable. You just can't have that anymore. I'm sorry. It's Jesus.
We'll get a little bit more into these odds too. But I think one of the other things, the downside of, and it's been for me lately, and I'm kind of curious on your thoughts too. And I know a little bit because we obviously you and I have watched football together. Mm-hmm. Is and one of the things that's really hurt
clothed
my
the entire time. Clothed the entire time.
Right, yes. I mean, I was shirtless, but that's fine. That just happens all.
Yeah, you still got your pants on, though.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, it's nothing. I'm just shirtless. You know,
just got to get the gun.
But, you know, rubbing, you know, ice around my nipples. did I say that out loud? Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Oh, nobody listens out. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, one thing of you and I watching football together, and one thing that I've sort of noticed, we noticed last week as we were watching the FSU-Alabama game, and it's even more prevalent in the NFL. And one of my things that I've really disliked about the NFL recently is the amount of challenges of every single play of this is a first down. Let's go see if it's a challenge. Every touchdown challenge. It just, for me, it takes a lot of the drama out of the game. And I was one of those people for so long. And I'm that way for baseball and pretty much all sports. Of like, hey, get the call right. But at a certain point, it's like, Jesus Christ, just make a call and like stick with it for more than 2 seconds. Because it's like, touchdown, hold on, let's go look. And then like 20 minutes later, they come back. All right, it's a touchdown. Or you know, it's just like, it's just so much is every play, every big touchdown. You can't celebrate a touchdown yet.
No,
you know what I mean? Like
year.
A big.
You can kind of this year, kind of.
Yeah, well, no, I mean like, no. I don't mean in terms of rules of like guys getting flags thrown. I mean like you, the fan.
Oh, that's right,
if your team
yeah.
scores a big touchdown. And it's like, well, let's go to the tape. Did he step out of bounds at the 30? And then, like, you got to wait for this replay to go. And it's like, nope, he didn't. And it's like, yay. Like, it's not that same thing where a guy makes, like, a miraculous catch. And you're like, oh, that was incredible. And it's like, well, hold on. Let's look at 15 replays of it to make sure it's a touchdown. oh, okay, it is. All right, now you can celebrate. And it's just like, eh, okay, like I'm kind of done already. Like, yep, that's cool. But it's just like the refs have like no handle on the game at any point at all.
No, guys, nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody,
no confidence. We don't know what the fuck a catch is. Half the game is like going to some NFL, you know, ex-NFL ref and having him try to discuss what the play is going to be, and then him being wrong. And the commentator's the wondering, part. Oh, I don't know. That's a catch, I think. Oh, I don't know. Are you sure that's a catch? No, I don't think it's a guy. He's got 2 feet. No, he's dragging a foot. No, he's bobbling the ball. And it's like, I don't know anymore. Like, that's not fun to me. That's really taken a lot out of the game for me now. It's just like the games just seem like tedious. You know, replay fests, and replays, of course, lead to commercials. And you know, you get the thing that I love the most is, you know, touchdown commercial or touchdown replay commercial, replay kickoff commercial. You know?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Two plays, timeout commercial. It's like, Jesus fucking Christ. There's been like 8 commercial breaks in the last 10 minutes of this game.
The game has been way over officiated for the last, I mean, and it's been getting worse just with expanding replay. And then
just make a call and just say that's our call. Like,
and now every turnover
one ref
is
just
review.
Be like, oh, it's offsides, and I said it's offsides, guys. Like, enough. Like,
And I want to know, why does it take so long? And I want to know this from the MLB and the NHL at times too. Although they're probably the best about it. Is why does it take so long for the guy in the nerve center to just say out, safe, you know, pass interference, down, fumble, whatever, right? Why does it take so damn long? Why does everybody have to stay around? I thought the whole point of these headquarters, these war rooms, oh, now we go to the war room into the NFL headquarters in New York where the replay official will make the call. I thought the whole point of those guys was to make it so that it would happen almost instantaneously. I thought that was the point. But,
right, it's taking longer.
Right, now I just imagine a guy just like rolling it forward, rolling it back, rolling it forward, rolling it back, and then he's just, I don't know.
Well, and then you have the conferences. Like, what are the refs conferencing about? If there's just a guy coming down, like, they're looking at the replays, there's a guy coming down, like, it should be one guy has an earbud, and then the guy at the war room just says, yeah, in, touchdown, immediately. It took 10 seconds. It should, that guy looks at the first replay and goes, yeah, it's touchdown, whatever, like, let's go with it.
I know.
I guess they're worried. I don't know. It's just,
I don't know what they're
really
worried about. You know, people were gambling on the game just fine in the 90s without all this crap, right? I mean, I don't have any specific statistics to back that up, but I'm pretty sure Las Vegas existed in the 1980s and 1990s, as did the NFL. And I'm also
sure?
pretty
we'll
sure
to, we'll look that up. Yeah.
That people before the implementation of replay, I want to say in the early aughts of after the turn of the century, but in the 80s and 90s, I'm pretty sure in their Coke and alcohol-fueled binges, there were plenty of red-blooded Americans that were willing to put down a couple hundy spot on, you know, Raiders-Falcons. I don't think that's changed all that much. So the idea that you've got to get it right for the gamblers doesn't really move much weight for me. And I don't think that the NFL, you know, people can't have it both ways because, you know, people can rightly say, well, they're worried about their antitrust exemption. I say, okay. But then they say, and the NFL's worried about gamblers too. And I'm like, wait a minute. If the NFL wants to lose their antitrust exemption, the fastest way to do it is be like, you know, we can't do that because the gamblers might, the sports gamblers. Right. The hundreds of billions of dollars that are gambled on this game every single year, we want to make sure that they get their cut, they get their proper cut so that they stay in business. That's the fastest way to lose antitrust exemption. And, you know, okay, well, which is it if it's going to be one or the other? But you're absolutely right. The game has become increasingly tedious. But, you know, it gets me every year. It gets me every single year right around this time. Training camps happen at just the right time as baseball season goes into that lull. And right before the playoffs, right before September call-ups, here's the NFL with, hey, here's this other sport that you may have forgotten about. Right? Because
you hear the crack, you know, you hear the helmets clashing.
Right, you hear the click. Yeah, the
reins being stewed, and you're like, oh, here we go.
Oh, yes. You know, you hear the barking of the cadence and all that, and, you know, it doesn't really matter, and I try to pretend that, like, I'm going to care who the third string, like, safety is. Like, oh, yeah, you know what, I think this guy's going to be pretty good. I was reading up on him on the internet. I'm going to forget his name in 20 minutes. I don't really care. But it's a change of pace, just like the MLB preseason is a break from hockey playoffs, is a break from basketball playoffs, etc. It's a change of pace, and it gets me every year. So going into this, I'm pretty excited. I, again, am also dejected at just how good the Patriots are. And the only knock I can see on the Patriots is, well, they've got a lot of new faces that we haven't heard about, and we have to wait and see if they're going to fit in Bill Belichick's system, whether it be on offense or defense. And I said, that's what they do. That's been their MO for years, is finding guys like LeGarrette Blount and then just turning him into a Pro Bowler, and now he's off making a ton of money in Philadelphia. And finding guys like Ben Hogan, and finding guys like the murder guy. Why am I blanking on his name?
Which murder guy?
Oh, which murder guy? Yeah, the double
Aaron
murder
Hernandez?
Guy. Aaron Hernandez, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Finding guys like him. Somehow.
There's a few murder guys. Ray Carruth. I don't know if you were going with Ray Carruth there.
No, yeah, but he wasn't a Patriots
old
guy.
Old school murder guys.
That was messed up. I mean,
sure if you were going Marvin Harrison, Ray Lewis. I mean, there were plenty of murder guys.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you know what? That Ray Carruth thing. I mean, Aaron Hernandez, he was just like a bad dude. Just like he wanted to be a gangster, like he wanted to be Tony Soprano, that kind of thing. Like order a hit on a guy that he thinks is like against him or something like that. Like he wanted to live that lifestyle, and ostensibly he did, and got punished for it. But Ray Carruth, that was evil. That was just pure, unadulterated evil in what that guy wanted to do to another human being. Or, well, mm-hmm. what he wanted to hire somebody else to do. Right, to two human beings. That was awful. And one of the human beings is an infant. That right. was... And he's getting out soon, isn't he, Mr. Argyle?
Yeah, I was looking that up. October 22nd, 2018. So, yeah,
woo!
Right around the
corner. Him and OJ doing sidelines? Can you imagine? OJ's going to be out around that time? Oh, it's going to be great. The NFL getting the band back together. Showing these young bucks a thing or two. Ezekiel Elliott.
Here's how you do it, kid.
Yeah. You got to hire a hitman to try to murder your estranged girlfriend and unborn son. I believe it was unborn son. Yep.
Yeah, I forgot if it was at that point. I think they had to deliver it. It was 8 months or something like that. And then, yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Great, great story.
She passed away. Yep. That's. Every time I think about it, it's just bad. But, you know. The season is, I mean, I've learned not to make predictions about the NFL season. I've learned that the hard way. Because last year I was like, you know, Carolina Panthers, they're my pick to repeat. They're going to be good this year. And then that happened. So I'm not making predictions.
Yeah, I was listening to some show that said, I think it was something like nine of the last seasons, like a team has gone from last to first in their division. Like
what?
Every single season. Yeah, it was some ungodly, ridiculous number in a row, and I'm like, oh my God. Like,
ooh!
So who's your pick?
You know who my pick is. Plus 7,500, baby. The Chicago damn Bears.
You are out of your mind.
The first to last in their division. I'm sorry, plus 7,500 are their odds to win the NFC Championship.
They're terrible. They're
plus 2,000 to win the NFC. You put a hundy down on that, you get $2,000, and you just told me that like nine out of some odd years, some team has gone from last to first in their division. And
yeah,
the
but
Packers,
some of those teams are, most of those teams are good and have talented players.
Yeah, they're going to figure out Mike Glennon soon enough. He'll be cut and fired and gone, and then it'll be Mitchell Trubisky's show, daggummit.
Who's he throwing to? Who's the wide receiver?
Oh, damn it. Yeah, I forgot about that. Kevin White's going to have a breakout season.
Okay, yeah.
As in a full season. He's going to have... How's that, Kevin White is going to have a full season. And...
And their best player, Kyle Long, what's going on with him? He's all...
He might not play this week. And Pernell McPhee had his knee scoped. And also,
by all means, I'm not telling you to not do this bet.
You know what? Just because Pernell McPhee is beginning the season on the PUP list again doesn't mean anything, okay? I mean, they can activate him virtually at any time. And John Fox said that he's in the best shape he's ever seen him in. Okay, so if John Fox says it,
if a coach would ever lie about an athlete being in great shape, no, yeah. never. So that's.
And Adam,
thought you were gonna go Rams. I thought you were gonna go Rams, man. Were they last though in their division last year? Because they have ridiculous.
No, that's gotta be the 49ers. It's gotta be the 49ers. I'll check that.
Yeah, I was wondering who was terrible, because I remember the Rams were terrible. Because that's your boy Jared Goff. Or are you off the Goff train now?
I'm off the Goff train.
Oh, you've left it, and now you've
no.
Every ticket that you once had is burned. You're like, I was never on that train.
I don't even know. It's like,
what train? I didn't know there was a train.
You know how you
no
had
train.
People lying about how they were on the Titanic? Like, oh, or like more, we'll hit more close to home. You know how people lie about how they said, oh, you know, I was supposed to be on one of those 9/11 planes. You know,
yeah, or Disco Demolition.
Yes.
The whites. Like, literally, that game had 190,000 people at it. But, you know.
You know, I was there. I was there when those hippies stormed the field. It was
there was like 1,200 people there. You were not there. Like,
no. Yeah, it was the 49ers finished last in the
NFC. Oh, okay, so the Rams NFC are not a worst first.
West.
Okay.
Yeah,
so, the Bears.
Last in the NFC were the Eagles, the Niners, the Bears, the Panthers. Oh, it's probably the Panthers.
Oh, yeah, they were worse, weren't they?
They were 6-10. They were last in the NFC South. Last in the AFC, the Jets. That's not getting much better.
Chargers, no, don't do that. Don't do that, Pat.
The Chargers were last. The Browns, no.
Maybe the Chargers will be inspired by the fact that they play in like a shitty soccer field now. Have you seen that field, by the way?
Do you know the name of it off the top of your head? I can't. LA or no? What's it? Yeah, LA Chargers. We'll go field. Don't know if we're having a little bit of a technical hiccup. It looks as though we are. The StubHub Center is the name of the Chargers field, and oh boy, yeah. It looks about the StubHub Center is about what you would think the FAU or what is the FAU, the Florida Atlantic University field. Like pretty much exactly what that looks like. Like about capacity, like a really high tech high school football field in a place that takes high school football way too seriously. Like
hello,
Texas. All right, Rich has returned. We'll jump right in. I was looking at the StubHub Center, and yes, that looks like I was just talking about it. That looks like the FAU field. Like when you back in the NCAA football days, when I would choose the FAU Owls, I'm like, oh man, this is like a little mini stadium, isn't it? Like you got
a little baby stadium.
Right,
oh.
You've got like the one row of stadium seating around the entire field, which is nice. It's cute. It's not a cathedral like NFL stadiums are, but oh yeah, that's pretty nice. That's exactly what the StubHub Center is, and yeah, that's pretty pathetic. That is pretty pathetic, and it kind of puts to rest the idea that I don't know, and a professional football team needs a gigantic giga stadium because why are the Chargers? How could the Chargers possibly play in such a field? How is that even possible?
Well, they're going to, but they don't want to. They need their big money field. And It's coming soon. It's one of those weird things where it's like everybody had to get to LA so quickly, and then nobody had anything ready in LA. It's like we need to get to LA. Yeah, and no one's watching our games either. Have you seen like the TV ratings in LA are fucking horrible? So it's like why are we doing this again? The NFL does this LA thing every few years, and then I was like, oh geez, nobody in LA likes football. All right, we're out of here. Like not you don't even test one team. You give them two teams right off the bat.
Yep.
What are you doing?
Give yourself the best chance and send a good team there, and maybe you got something. But you send two dregs of both conferences.
Hey, hold on. This Jared Goff. this Jared Goff sideswipes. I'm not gonna stand.
You're not gonna stand for the Jared Goff?
No,
you're
gonna
get angry?
He's garbage.
Okay. Thank you. And they traded a lot to get him too, by the way. Which is going to be good. But, all right, so we'll hit the high points of NFL season talking points. Are the Falcons going to get back to the Super Bowl?
Oh, man.
Julio Jones is going to do Julio Jones things.
Yeah, they're a contender for sure. I wonder.
A legitimate 2,000 yards as a wide receiver kind of guy.
Everything's pretty well there, too, right? They didn't lose a whole lot, either. It's pretty well all together. The NFL's weird. Like, if there wasn't just, like, the weird league where it's, like, impossible to try to predict, they seem like one that would definitely get up there. But there's a few other contenders as well. But they have a very good chance, I think, of getting back there.
Yeah, and, you know, it's their defense is going to be – listen, in the NFL, you can be – it's hard to be both, like, kind of good on offense and kind of good on defense and play really well. And what hurt the Falcons last year was the defense. I mean, we watched it in Super Bowl Bruce Lee. I mean, we saw it. We saw the defense be the bane of their existence, the bane of their Super Bowl chances was the lack of a competent pass defense. And they haven't done much to really change that. And I, you know, how long can you can skate pretty far in a damn good offense. I mean, they showed you that. But I don't know that going up against other teams, like when you run into, like, let's say, for instance, that this year the Seahawks don't get blown out. And then the Falcons, you know, you're not playing. I'm trying to remember the playoff. I think it was the playoff tree last year. The Falcons beat the this is a great pod, I know. I'm sorry, I got to look it up. The Falcons beat the Packers, I want to say, in the postseason. Division.
Green Bay Packers, I don't recall off my head.
Dallas Cowboys. Oh, no. It was the it was the Falcons beating the Packers in the conference championship. But the way I look at the NFC West, the Seahawks are probably going to waltz right in to the at least the divisional round. No more play. No wild card berth for them. The NFC West is there for their taking, and it's going to be. I don't see any way that they don't make it to. Unless the seeding gets wonky, I got to paint them as being in the NFC Championship game. Unless the seeding gets weird, and they're playing a really good matchup that just happened to skate into a wild card spot or beat their divisional opponent in the first round of the playoffs. I got to believe that that's how it's going to shake down. So, I don't know. I don't think that I just don't know that the Falcons are able to get it done against the Seahawks. That's just the way I'm shaping it up. And if I had to choose, I think the Falcons lose in that game. Think of Falcons lose in the matchup.
We mentioned it too, a surprise in that division, the NFC South, the Panthers, you know, a team that, you know, was last place last year, but could have a little uprising on their own.
With Joe Webb.
You got Joe Webb. So, I mean,
bringing it up,
been playing wide receiver for 5 years and hasn't been in the league in a year, but hey, I'm ready. I'm ready to go, buddy. I'm here.
All right. Let's jump into some of these playoff odds before we get to the AL MVP. AFC Championship odds, you got the Patriots at +175. That means you bet $100, you win $175. The Raiders and Steelers are both +600. The Broncos, Texans, and Chiefs are +1,200. And the Titans, I entered that in there. I put that in there just for us. The Titans sit at +1,800. Do any of those interest you? Were you a betting man? Not in terms of favorites to win. All right, what interests you of the AFC?
I like the Raiders. That +600 Raiders sounds pretty good. I mean, that's not great. You're not getting a super good return on that, but that seems like an interesting one. It's not like the Patriots. Like, I would never bet on the Patriots at that point because, like, that 175, that's chump change. I'm not getting that back. But the Raiders one is interesting to me. The Titans one is pretty interesting as well. That, you know, Marcus Mariota.
That's
gets a
long, you know, that's a long shot bet. That's a classic long shot bet.
Exactly. That's like, you know, hey, I'll put, you know, like you said, $100 on it. We'll see what happens at the end of the year. And you get lucky or whatever, because, like, yeah, that's an interesting one. I like that one a little bit more than maybe I should, but it's not like I'm saying for sure the Titans lock it in, whatever. But like you're saying, good little bet to sort of put down and go, hey, you know, we'll see how that you know,
and all these odds
into something later.
All these odds are from Bovada, and I looked elsewhere, and the Titans can be found +2,000 elsewhere as well. So this is to win the AFC Championship. NFC champion odds, you got the Packers at +400, which I am very surprised at. Vegas loves the Packers for some reason.
Or do Packers fans love betting on the Packers? Ooh, like that could I wonder if that's a possibility. You always got to remember that, too, that there's always that component.
Yeah,
too,
there is. The Seahawks +500, and at 600 and 650, about even, obviously not, are the Falcons and Cowboys. You know what? As much as I talked about the Seahawks, I kind of like the Falcons at +600 there too. That's interesting. And of course, just in terms of shits and gigs, at +7,500 are the Bears and Rams to win the NFC Championship. They are tied for the second worst odds to win the NFC Championship behind the 49ers, who are at +10,000. But hey, get really lucky, the Niners show up. I don't know who's. Who the hell is even quarterback in that team? Is that?
Oh, who is quarterback in the 49ers? I don't know. It's a good trivia question. Is who's quarterbacking the San
Francisco? It's not David Fales. It's what's his name?
Are you looking? Don't look it up. Don't look it up. Are you looking it up?
I'm not looking it up right now.
Okay, I will look it up. I want you to play.
Who's quarterback in the 49ers?
Yeah, one of the favorite games of Americans everywhere.
Oh,
my own first allowance.
I think I know who. I'll let you find out first.
Oh God, I can't. It's
yeah.
Even a Google search for it didn't show up. It was just like, nah.
It's like,
God, ew.
I know who it is. I know who it is. And I know. Do you like looking at his Chrome Dome? The Chrome Dome of one Brian Hoyer.
Brian Hoyer, indeed, won this week's edition of
Woo!
Who is starting for the 49ers.
What do I get? A swift kick in the nuts?
Yeah, you get Brian Hoyer. You get to watch Brian Hoyer quarterback an NFL team.
Hey. He threw for 300 yards for the Chicago Bears, presence. My friend.
Great pocket
presence. As did Matt Barkley. All right, our Super Bowl, overall Super Bowl odds. The Patriots at +325. The Packers at +800 again. Yeah, there's got to be a lot of money on the Packers. That's got to be it. The Raiders are at +1,000. The Seahawks, Steelers, and Falcons all at +1,200. And the Cowboys are at 1,400. Rich, does any of that interest you? Are you looking at that going?
Yeah, the Raiders one again. That +1,000 on the Raiders is pretty solid there. Yeah, the Packers one seems interesting to me. I don't think like they look like an okay team, but +800 to be next to the next to the Patriots is pretty interesting. The Cowboys are an okay bet, I guess. Like the Cowboys one would be an interesting one in the sense that I wonder how they adjust post Ezekiel Elliott, because I do wonder, and I've heard a few people talk about this as well, is that because their offensive line is as good as it is, it might be a situation where they don't really miss much without Ezekiel Elliott. Not that Ezekiel Elliott isn't a great player,
right,
but they can have a guy similar to those old Denver Broncos teams where it was like, whatever, whoever, they're going to get 1,000 yards. It doesn't matter. Like Mike Anderson, who the hell is Mike Anderson? Who cares? It doesn't matter. Our line's going to block for him, and he's going to be able, as long as he can run forward, he's going to be fine. So it'd be interesting to see if maybe the Cowboys, even without Ezekiel Elliott for the first few weeks, maybe you get decent odds on that. Even at 1,400, that's really good odds for the Cowboys. That was a super talented team. Dak Prescott, obviously getting better by the year as well. I don't know. That could be an interesting one there at 1,400 for the Cowboys, even with the Ezekiel Elliott thing. I wonder if that doesn't matter quite as much as maybe the odds makers might think it does.
Well, as much as I like to decry sometimes the odds, the money lines that I see, they're in business and I'm not, so... They seem to do pretty well where they set these lines. There's got to be some kind of odd science to all this nonsense. But you know what? I'm pretty solid putting $100 on my Chicago Bears to win the NFC North.
I love it. You better do it. I'm going to know if you didn't do it.
I don't even know how to.
Yeah,
if I wanted to, I don't know where to go. Like, I'm the kind of idiot where I'm like, oh, so you got to fly to Vegas then to bet on these, huh? Wow, that's a pretty long way. Like, I don't want to go online. Like, do they track that? Is the government looking at that? I don't want to be arrested.
There's got to be. You know what you got to do is go to some like scuzzy sports bar. I imagine this is how it. I hope it still works this way. Where you go to like scuzzy sports bars and there's some like weird guy taking action at the back of the. Does that still happen? I hope it still happens. I want that to happen.
Are we talking about here? Because he'll
do everything. He'll do whatever you want for him, buddy. Like, if you're paying, he'll do it.
Like, yeah.
But that's. I wonder if there's still that, if that's CD Underground still exists. Probably not, but.
Right. Because,
with the internet and all, yeah.
I'd like to pretend that, like, Bovada wouldn't screw me. Like, if I won big, if I put $100 on the Bears, like, they wouldn't want to. Like, if they just forgot to pay out. Like, what the hell am I really going to do? Am I going to be like, hey, giant sports book, pay me my money. Yeah, they don't.
Or you're going to go to the government or your local police force and be like, hey, I was illegally gambling online.
I was gambling online, which you're not supposed to do, but I did it, and they're screwing me. Can you help? No? Okay.
They didn't pay us.
But they didn't pay. It was great. All right. Well,
the bad guys didn't pay me.
All right. Do you want to talk about the AL MVP? Because I do.
I do. Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Let's forget the Mets thing. The Mets thing is stupid. The Mets are stuck fucking dummies, and they're trying to...
Why is Matt Harvey pitching on 3 days rest?
He's got to get in there. He's got to get back. Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense.
We'll talk about this for like 10 seconds. So Matt Harvey is going to start Wednesday on short rest. So by the time most of you guys listen to this, he will be probably taking the mound.
Yeah.
Imagine Terry Collins says he wanted to get him back on the mound as soon as possible. Harvey threw 70 pitches over 2 innings while giving up 7 runs in his return from the disabled list on Saturday against the Astros. This is so dumb.
He's had four.
He's like basically opened it up.
Four extended DL stints.
Yes.
Since 2013. That's not good for a pitcher. That's not what you want from a starting pitcher. and just activated from the DL. And he got clobbered in his return from the DL. And he's being thrown out on 3 days rest. Because, what, Terry Collins says he's a competitor who likes to compete. So he's got to get out there again to compete. Competitor. Did Terry Collins throw in National Football League by chance?
Yeah.
Start saying football, he's a good football player? Yeah.
Here's the what's now Terry Collins has essentially opened it up to anytime a guy gets rocked and like leaves in an inning or two, that you can just pitch him on short rest, because why not?
Right, he only threw 70 pitches, like, yeah.
70 pitches is still a lot of pitches for a guy coming back from the DL. Like,
right, with all the warm-up and all the the bullpen work and all that to get ready. Yeah, that's a lot of throwing. Just because you get knocked out in the first inning doesn't mean you're like ready to go 2 days later.
Not to Terry Collins or not to the Mets. What are the Mets are so fucking dumb. This team, I swear to God, like they don't deserve
right.
anything.
It seems like the team that has a problem with hurt pitchers shouldn't be redlining their hurt pitchers to try to get them back, especially in a lost season.
Right, that's the other part too. Just tell them, you know what, Matt, chill out. Season's over. We suck.
Go back to the One Oak Bar, whatever the hell. Stay out all night. We don't care. Go have your fun. Go be the Dark Knight. And we'll call you in February for when pitchers and catchers report. Just never mind. Let's just let it be. Yeah, they're lol Mets indeed. Lol Mets. All right, the AL MVP. Rich, who you got?
Oh man, I'm very nervous on the who did you think I was gonna pick thing or who did I want to pick because I really want Jose Altuve. Is that the one you thought?
Oh, damn it!
Who'd you think?
I thought it was Mike Trout.
Oh, I do like a little Trout, but man, Altuve's awesome.
I know.
I didn't realize yeah.
Yeah.
I love Trout though. I do. I don't. I want Trout to have as many. Like I still want. I want him to like win MVPs. For like decades to make up for the 2 years where he didn't win when he should have won.
Right.
I want like 2027. They're like, he really should have won that one. Like,
right.
He really should have won the 2011 MVP. Let's just give it to him again. Like, it's fine. Like, if he's ever on the fence and there's two guys. But, man, Altuve is so good. Like, Altuve is not only is a great defender, but he's leading the league. Like, weighted runs created plus. And he's leading the league in, like, OPS plus. And,
yep.
And weighted on base percentage. It's like, dude, like, even if you thought, like, Altuve was just a guy that's, like, a solid, reliable guy and, like, a solid fielder or whatever. No, he's, like, the best hitter in baseball, which is insane.
That is true. I mean, it's hard. You don't really find yourself atop after 133 games now, I think. You don't. Not many players find themselves atop the AL of all leagues in weighted on base average, weighted runs created plus, and as you said, OPS plus, and second in win probability added. That's pretty hard to do. And I understand where you're coming from with the really good season. I get it. But in 91 games, Mike Trout has a 6.2 FanGraphs wins above replacement. Compared to Altuve's 6.6 or 6.5. And as win probability added has it, another counting stat, Trout has 5.4 wins via win probability added accrued to Altuve's 3.2. In an offensive runs above average, Trout is above 51, maybe now above 52. I know they had a big game out in LA two nights ago. So he's probably above 52, and Altuve was at like 48 offensive runs above average, another counting metric. I think for my money, for my dominant, most valuable player money, the guy that's competing with, in counting stats, the guy that's competing with the league leader who's qualified, who's only played in 91 games, that guy's pretty damn valuable. How wrong? Does that sound wrong? Because it seems like it should be wrong, right?
Yeah. No, I'm. You know what, Joe?
Whoa!
You're on the sites? Yeah.
Whoa!
I apologize, sir. I do a lot.
Whoa! Yeah, you do a lot of podcasts. Did you do the flagship tonight?
No, I didn't. No, that's...
Oh, okay.
But
You do a lot of podcasts. That is a lot of
what
podcasts.
I was going to bring up is... what was I going to do? Oh, I was going to come with a really dumb argument. is, you know, if you look at the wins loss, like the Angels didn't really lose many games when Trout was out. They actually were better. I'm joking. No, Trout is incredible. He, what he's doing in those games is just nuts. So do you know off the top of your head how many games he has to be to become qualified in these things? Or is there a situation where he is not going to be qualified when it's all said and done?
It needs to be 3.1 plate appearances for every team game. So that comes out to 502.2 plate appearances. I don't know whether they round up or down. Let me go to Mike Trout Fangraphs right now. And the last time I checked, the Angels had 27 games left. He is at 412 plate appearances right now. So call that 88 plate appearances needed. He needs to average 3.26 plate appearances for every single game of the 27 remaining that the Angels have in order to technically qualify.
Okay, so he can't get hurt. He's pretty much got to play every game.
He's got to play every game, and he's got to have a plate appearance. He's got to have four plate appearances. You know, it can't be his offense can't get shut down around him. Like if he can absorb maybe a couple 3 plate appearance games, but he's got to have four, preferably five, just to make sure, just to soften up the average. Yeah,
man,
it's doable.
I do kind of hope he gets it. Yeah, it's definitely doable for sure. You're convincing me a little bit with this Trout. Yeah,
if he gets it, if he gets it, and then all of a sudden he gets vaulted to the top of the qualified leaderboards, because Altuve's weighted on base average is leading the league among qualified hitters at 411. His again among qualified hitters is weighted runs created plus of 163 leads all qualified hitters in the AL. If Mike Trout qualified right now, his weighted on base average would lead the league by far at 457, as would his weighted runs created plus of 194 to Altuve's again 163. That's more than 30 points of weighted runs created plus. Again, who's to say whether he can keep this up over 27 games?
Sure.
Right?
I mean, but it is Mike Trout.
It is Mike damn Trout.
God, this guy is so fucking good.
Jesus, I know. Like, and play center
field. Do people really appreciate it?
I don't
know that we do.
I don't think he does.
I don't think we do.
But he plays out in L.A. He's not the biggest name in L.A.
They haven't made big playoff runs.
And he's on late at night most of the time, at least for 80, especially because he's not only is he playing on a team in the left coast, you know, with the divisional schedule, what it is, he's more often than not, he's playing on the West Coast. And so many people in the rest of the country, in the country's larger population centers outside of the West Coast, they're going to bed when he's playing and doing his thing. And we live in an information age, yeah, but I don't see a lot of Mike Trout dominance. I see Mike Trout hitting home runs, cool, but I don't see Mike Trout smacking the crap out of a double. Or, you know, just gliding effortlessly to a ball that another center fielder would have had to gassed himself to go get or might not have even gotten to in the first place. I don't see a lot of that, and we're in Chicago. So what are people on the East Coast seeing, et cetera? I think he should be one of the biggest names in baseball, but I get the feeling that he's not. Because you get the Bryce Harper who's getting the T-Mobile deal or whatever carrier that is, right? And Trout, I don't know, is Trout just a goon? Is he can he not talk? Maybe that's it. But
no, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. Have you ever heard him talk? And like, he's fine. It's weird. I think
he did something for the Weather Channel, right? Didn't he?
Yeah. No, he's like a huge weather buff or whatever. I think the problem is too that people have said this too, that he is not really like the most open he doesn't really want to do all this shit. He just kind of wants to play baseball and be good at it. And like, unfortunately, in modern days, like, we just can't, like, those aren't our stars. The guys that are just, he's 239th in career WAR already.
Holy shit. That's insane. And he's 26 years old? 27?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Jesus. Yeah. But, I mean, if you, through 91 games, are competing, you know, maybe the FWAR calculations are off because you have baseball weighted. You have baseball references wins above replacement here. And Altuve is leading people by far. He is more than one win above replacement ahead of Trout, and Trout is even behind the likes of Corey Kluber. And that's another question.
Andrelton Simmons,
and Andrelton Simmons at 6.6. Kluber is at 6.5, Trout at 6.1, baseball reference, wins above replacement. Altuve at 7.4. So Altuve in BWAR with a bullet. And you've got the OPS plus to boot. Trout doesn't qualify for that. What's Trout's?
Is OPS plus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, you have to.
Because it's not on the qualified leaderboards, which is the crappiest
part. Yeah, right,
part.
Right, right.
They should have like a little addendum where it's like.
This right, it's like the Mike Trout addendum. Like, yeah, here we go. All right, we'll put Mike Trout on there too.
Do you want to take a guess?
Oh, God. It's probably. Let me see what Altuve is at. Altuve's at 168. I'm going to say it's something ridiculous, like 174 or something, right?
201.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. God damn it, Mike Trout.
Stop doing this, Mike. Come on.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus. And that's like a 201. People don't really. I mean, that's a really. That's like an
incredible. No, that's incredible. Especially for right. A second baseman.
That's like Cyborg Barry Bonds numbers, but it's just like Mike Trout. It's just like, I just hit like doubles.
But in Altuve's season, for a second baseman, for Altuve and what he's doing, I mean, Mike Trout gets more help from defensive adjustments to wins above replacement metrics
than Altuve does
from the same metrics, because Mike Trout plays a, quote, harder defensive position. So for Altuve to be where he is incredible. I mean, it's not first base, it's not right field, but second base is not, it's not shortstop, it's not third base. Look at Anthony Rendon in the NL and why he is atop a lot of wins above replacement metrics, both F and BWAR, because that positional adjustment for third base is helping him the hell out. Because if you perform defensively well there, I just think with that kind of dominance, Trout, oh, man, I hope he qualifies. If he qualifies,
yeah, I kind of do
wins.
Too. I'm kind of hoping too. Yeah, so let's. I think that's my official stance, is Altuve for now. If Trout qualifies, put Trout up there.
Okay, I agree.
Because I'm not one of those pitcher MVP guys.
You're not a pitcher MVP guy?
Nah, I don't like it. It just feels icky. They have their own award.
Chris Sale,
don't,
though.
Don't get it. No, get away from your award. You got your own award. Win that award.
Right, but it's not most valuable offensive hitter. That's
I don't
not,
care.
Chris Sale doesn't do it for you with what he's doing.
Yeah, it's great, but they got their own award. Win your award.
7.5 FWAR. Let me pull up the pitcher WAR leaderboards. Please pull up Baseball Reference. No, not FanGraphs. There it is. WAR for pitchers. Ooh, like ooh. Sale not getting as much love. I forget what Baseball WAR is for pitchers is based on. Oh. I forget. Sale at 5.5. Gio Gonzalez. Oh, my God. It's 6.4. Of course, that's the National League. And Kluber is at 6.5. So for the AL, it goes Kluber, Sale, and then Marcus Stroman?
Yeah, I don't know when the Stroman thing was a thing, but like he's good. I know he's good, but he's like better than I... Man,
yeah.
he showed up on these leaderboards, and I'm like, I didn't know Marcus Stroman was good this year. Like,
wow.
I watch a lot of baseball, and the Marcus Stroman is good thing kind of caught me by surprise. I don't know why.
That's interesting.
Just because the Blue Jays are bad, so.
Yeah.
But he's really good. He's having an incredible year. But
and it's not just a durability thing, too. Because you can be durable and still be bad. It's not like you're just pitching a lot.
Right, right.
And thus
right.
accruing wins above replacement. You have to be pitching well because, I mean, you're up there 5.1. Grinke is ahead of him at 5.4, and then it's Chris Sale at 5.5. You don't get 0.4 behind Chris Sale with the year Chris Sale is having without being pretty damn good at getting hitters right. out, right?
Hmm. Yeah, and my thing as far as the pitcher winning the MVP is that unless there's a because there's been certain cases. Like the last one, Kershaw won the 2014 NL MVP. He went 21-3 with a 1.77 ERA.
Okay, yeah.
That's fine. And there wasn't like a clear winner of the award. So yeah, you know, that was pretty good. You can give that to like Christian Verlander, 2011, he won the AL MVP, went 24-5, 240 ERA, 250 strikeouts for him. So again, pretty good year. But if you have cases and you have guys that are, cause in my case, I think Altuve and Trout are doing enough where you could vote for either of them.
Okay.
Yeah, if there wasn't those guys, if say Aaron Judge was like leading the league in those things, like he's, you know, he's relatively, he was close there, you know, second in FWAR, second weighted on base, you know, second wins, you know, weighted run created plus. So like he's right up there with those. But if it was like Aaron Judge was like atop those leaderboards or like those are the numbers he was putting up and this is the season he was putting up, then I would maybe be like, all right, I'll entertain a Sale, I'll entertain a Kluber, I'll entertain these guys. But I think Altuve and then soon Trout are doing so well that like it'd be silly to give it to a pitcher. I think
right.
Those guys I think are very clearly the best position players and arguably the best players. And right now Altuve is in both leaderboards for WAR.
Mm. Okay, I'll buy that. And just
I don't like pitchers.
All right, and just NL MVP awards. Stanton and Votto. Do you have a problem? I mean, Stanton obviously the big name, 6.6 BWAR as of right now, but Joey Votto is right there at 6.4. How much do you give the? Are you in playoff contention or is your team in playoff contention because of you? How much stock do you give that or none at all?
Yeah, I don't give it too much, but unfortunately I don't vote for the MVP. So like, so which is one of the issues, like it wouldn't bother me. Like if you're the best player, you're the best player. And it's like, regardless of whether your team is good or not, I think any smart baseball fan knows that, you know, one guy being great isn't going to make, you know, the team any better. Like
right.
He can do everything he wants, but it's not, but I mean, I could see, I mean, especially with the team being as bad as they are, I mean, the Reds are what, the fourth worst team in the league, or in their league, like in the NL. Like,
I want to check the standings on that.
They're 59-79. I'm looking right now, so they're tied with the Mets. The only teams worse are the Phillies and the Giants.
Okay.
So, and again, like I'm not making that argument, but I could definitely see like it'd be an uphill climb for Votto because they just, other than Andre Dawson in like 87 is the only one that everybody always brings up of like, oh, that team was terrible, and you know Andre Dawson still won the MVP, like. I don't know if the voters are ever going to give it to a guy. I think they would be more inclined to give it to a guy like Stanton, whose team, you know, while not like super playoff contenders, were at least in the mix at 67 and 71 or, you know, in the mix near 500.
Yeah.
Whereas Votto's team is as bad as they are that I feel like voters are going to have a real tough time voting, you know, in that sense. And very hanging on the valuable sense and attributing value to team
right.
wins, which, you know, it's not what you do. But yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with it personally, but I think the voters will.
And I could definitely see a world where Paul Goldschmidt finishes ahead of Joey Votto in MVP votes.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Just because Votto gets dinged, despite being 6 points better, or no, excuse me, 14 points better in OPS plus and .1 WAR. I mean, despite being a little bit better, people going, well, you know, Goldschmidt's team is in the playoff hunt because of him or in the playoffs because of him. And, of course, Stanton, I think, is going to be the runaway winner. All right. You know, I thought you'd be a little bit more about pitchers winning the MVP. I'm learning new things about you.
They have the Cy Young, man.
All right. I can see
Young,
that. I can see that argument. I can see the idea.
Did Mike Trout win the Cy Young Award?
No. Ooh. Oh, that is a good counter, my friend. All right. I see where your allegiance.
I understand
is
it's player, but it should just call him
off. Yeah, it's just anyway. Clarify it, and you know, baseball. Come on, so we don't have these stupid.
It should
arguments.
Still give people the cars. The MVP, yeah. The problem is the valuable parts. People are like, it's not the best player. It's who's most valuable, and who's most valuable is the guy who's on a team that's in the playoffs. It's like no. That whole award, they need to figure out something else. So.
Yep, the NFL's got it right with just offensive player of the year. Defensive player of the year, et cetera, for each
sure.
Each conference, et cetera. All right, we want to wrap it up there?
Yeah, I think that's done.
Jeez, we've been running a long-ass time. All right, that'll do it for episode number 42 of the KNP Show. You can follow the show on Twitter at KANDP Show. You can follow Rich and his the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, as well as all the great wrestling content at Voices Wrestling. I mentioned the flagship show. That'll be getting recorded later this week, so you can set your calendars for listening to some great wrestling content. You can follow me on Twitter at John's Voices. As always, visit us at kandpshow.com. For Rich Craich, I'm John Playtech. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time. We are out. Bye.